kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Fun show today. Later on the episode, Mick Waits of Four Horses is going to be joining the show. Chat about the game Kid Trip. But before then, you know, it's review time, and we're kicking things off. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing, sir?
Chilly Willy Sleepy Deepy. Oh, God, how are you?
What was that? Chilly Willy what?
Chilly Willy Sleepy Deepy. Making up words as I go.
You got a way with words, man.
It's one of my few talents. I make it work.
Oh, man. So should we just jump right into things? Sound good?
Let's get down to business, sir.
All right. First game to talk about is called Boiling Bolt, developed by Persistent Studios, published by Playdius Entertainment, released December 6th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $11.99. The Earth was shattered and reduced to floating islands hanging on the power of their crystal. Life went back to its course, forgetting the bitter past. A millennium later, you play June, a rebel soldier struggling to defend her island against an organization draining power out of the crystals. Pernell, what is Boiling Bolt?
Well, I think it's kind of funny because I know more about Boiling Bolt from your description of the game than I got from playing the game. You might think I'm like, ah, this is kind of weird, but no, I kid you not. So I guess the first thing to start off with is that the game is a side-scrolling shooter. If you're familiar with WrestleGun, it's that style. But if you're not familiar with WrestleGun, think shooter that kind of wraps around itself. So it's an arena that goes from left to right, but it connects. So you can technically, depending on the map at least, you can technically go all the way around the level if you wanted to.
Gotcha.
So what ends up happening with this game is you are essentially controlling a ship. I guess it's actually called the Boiling Bolt. I'm not sure. But the way the ship operates is it has a basic pea shooter gun, and then it has one of four different special guns that you can switch between on the fly. There is a ice shield, which kind of lets you charge it up and then release it to kind of create a blast radius around your ship that can blow things up. Then there is the Thunder Link, which is sort of like the hold down the button and auto fire at things that can come into the range of it. And you can target multiple things at once. Then there is the Mega Launcher, which is kind of my favorite one, actually. It is a black hole creator. So you fire it off, and you're holding down the button, and when you let it go, it actually opens up and it sucks in ships and bullets and your ship if you're too close to it, and then explodes and releases all the bullets and kills stuff that gets sucked into it and takes too much damage. And then the last weapon's called the Plasma Whip, which is literally a whip. You hold down the button and extends out a short distance, and it's like probably the most powerful weapon, but it's also close range, so it's a risky thing to use. Now, arcade mode consists of what seems to be five levels, though I have not beaten all five because this game is actually not easy. But it's five stages where each level, the goal changes. But, for example, one level will have you taking out a bunch of things called generators that are located around the city in that circular pattern I told you about. And when you take down one of the generators, it'll kind of lock off two sides of the screen, and you have to deal with waves of ships coming at you. Take all the waves of ships out and then move on, do it more times until you eventually deal with a boss who's a jerkbag. But you can beat him. And there's other levels that are more natural as far as how level progression goes. You go from left to right and take out targets until you get to the end and fight the boss. But story-wise, I don't know what the hell's going on. Like, I'll admit, I didn't sit and not press start at the beginning to see if maybe there was like a video intro that would pop up. But going into the game and clicking arcade mode to, as the game puts it, experience June's story, it immediately leads off to you in the middle of like the sky and a guy going, "Hey, we want your crystal." And another guy goes, "They want our crystal. Blow up their ships." You're like, okay. And it's like, you're just shooting shit. And the English is a little weird, but that's small potatoes overall, the English part. But it's the fact that it just kind of throws you into this random scenario and it's like, fight the guy. Like, okay, sure. And then after you do that part, you're immediately in like a mind. It's like, hey, there's the crystal. I better go get it. Uh-oh. It's like, why am I here? What happened? What is any of this? But if you're okay with just saying to hell with this story, I just want to play a good shooter. I think you can get that here, though, because I did have fun playing the game proper. It's not complicated, but it has meat to it, if that makes any sense. It's not an easy game. It'll challenge you, and the fun factor is certainly there. There's the arcade mode that I described earlier. There is the free play mode, which allows you to pick levels that you've beaten and go for high scores and times. There's a training mode where it gives you different goals to beat. And if you beat the goal, you're able to earn some money towards the shop, which I'll get to in a minute. But one thing I'll admit I did not like about the training mode, which can go depends on the player, I'll admit. Because while training was fun, for some odd reason, the developer decided to make it such you had to click the training option. Game loads up. Goes to the list of options for training. I'm sorry, I just realized what I did wrong. Training is just the tutorial mode. I'm describing challenges right now. Okay. Challenges are when you choose a specific task and you resolve the task and you win free money. You win money to succeed.
That's one of those days, isn't it?
It really freaking is, man. But now, to focus on the thing I screwed up, so the thing I'd have issues with the challenge mode is that it expects you to select challenges, game loads up, then it goes to the list of challenges, you select one, game loads up. And keep in mind, these aren't like 10-second loads. They might be 20 to 30 seconds sometimes. And then it loads with challenge. And I'm sure you've played games like, say, Super Meat Boy or any game that where it has like a short task that you can fulfill. And if you screw it up, you can reset, do a quick restart, try again until you get it right, right? Mm-hmm. In this game, if you do the reset option, it reloads you all the way back, and it goes through all the loading screens. Back in is terrible. If you beat a challenge and you get your reward of cash, it doesn't give you the option to just move on to the next challenge. It makes you back all the way out to the main menu, then go through it all again. It's a cool mode, but it was poorly executed from the scope of literally any game that offers a challenge mode. At this point in time, you should not be doing that. It just lets you stay in there, repeat should load quickly, and continuing should load quickly. It's only when you want to back all the way out is when it should take time to load, because it's understandable. You're leaving challenge mode.
Yeah.
But that's just something that I have to point out because it is there. But challenge mode in general is a fun time. Again, it makes you do things like beat enemy waves with using a very specific weapon, or survive without taking a hit, stuff like that.
And if nothing else, it sounds like that is a problem that could easily be looked into and possibly patched, where it's just like, well, instead of reloading the whole stage, why don't we just, you know, reload what has to be reloaded, or just allow you to move on. It just sounds like an oversight somewhere of like, why is that there? It should be fixed. So maybe they'll hear this and they'll be like, oh yeah, we were supposed to fix that, and then they'll fix it.
That's what I'm hoping. And it's also why I try to point that stuff out in general, because, you know, good or bad or fixable or not fixable, I mean, if it exists, it should be shared. And then the studio can make the call if they can fix it, which would be freaking great, by the way, because it would make this a lot better to play, you know, and let other people know too. But I totally forgot about the shop. So the shop is exactly how it sounds. You can earn money in the challenges mode. You can also pick up crystal shards as you're playing the main game. Sometimes enemies will drop them. And you can use crystal shards to buy modules for your ship. You can equip up to 3 on the ship, and they do things mainly modifying your stats on the ship. There's an attack stat, a speed stat, and a defense stat. I have no clue what defense does. I really don't know, because you die in one hit. You have multiple lives. Maybe defense is more lives, and I never quite noticed it. But maybe. I mainly focus on attack and speed because, again, at the time when I was trying to use defense, like, none of this is making sense. What is it doing? Don't care. Attack and speed, I know what they do. So I just kept buffing those up. But you got modules that can do that, and depending on the type that you buy, they'll be more expensive, and they'll be more specific with detriment sometimes. So, like, for example, level 1 strength mod will increase your attack by 1 and does nothing to the other 2. But the second level, called Super Strength, will increase your attack by 2, but decrease your speed by 1. So the more you want to buff one stat, the more you're going to lose on speed and or defense. So it's a gamble that you have to play. But you can balance them out between the 3. But there's also like sort of, you know, modifiers as well. So, for example, there'll be one that'll allow you to change your gun to a spread shot. And there's another one that I kind of bought and never took off where it increases your ability to dodge things because the game also has a dodge feature. So like while you're flying the ship, you can press the button and it kind of lets you dash ahead. And it doesn't make you invincible while you dash. But if you do, it has that bullet time sort of aspect where if you dash next to a guy, you slow time down and you can kind of shoot at them and take them out quicker.
That's
or cool. Or take them out. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, it's, that's what makes me sad. Like, the game, if you ignore, if I ignore the plot and deal with the challenge mode problem, the game is fun. Like, I enjoyed playing it.
Yeah, everything else you're telling me about the game is making me want to get this game. So I got to know, $12, what's your official verdict?
Like I said, as long as you're cool with those things not being a factor, it's a buy. Though, evaluating the game on its own accord, nothing else, I would say it's at least a try for $12.
I mean, it's a shmup. How many shmups have come out that they tried to tack a story onto? And no one gives a shit. Just let us shoot things.
Exactly, exactly. The only reason I said try it is for the reason that you just said, actually, which is more like, it's hard to gauge with like the variety that's available, but if you're looking for a shooter, you can't really go wrong with this, which is why I say it's worth a try, you know? But I don't think that if a person buys this game, they're going to regret it, likely. They're going to enjoy the game.
Also,
the thing worth pointing out, too, is that, again, it has that looping gameplay that I mentioned from WrestleGun. And this is on Xbox. So if you don't have a PS4 and you want to actually see what all the fuss is about regarding like a game where they have like the wraparound shooter, it's a cool concept and it's worth experiencing. I like it.
Good call. So I didn't even think about that with Razogun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good way to experience it on the Xbox.
Awesome. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Hand of Fate 2, developed and published by Defiant Development. Released November 7th on Steam and PS4, came out December 1st on Xbox One, $29.99 across the board. A new hero rises to challenge the dealer in Hand of Fate 2. Master a living board game of infinitely replayable quests, unlock new cards, build your adventure, then defeat your foes in brutal real-time combat. Draw your cards, play your hand, and discover your fate. Our friend Dark Mika wrote in a review of this one, so let's see what she has to say here. Have you played Hand of Fate at all?
I have not, but I am familiar with Hand of Fate. It's loosely, because I have the first game, but you know how life goes. You buy a game, I'm going to play it tomorrow, and then 3 years happen. But to my understanding, it's something akin to a guy, it's like a fortune teller who will play a card, or you choose a card, and that card can affect like the environment that you're going to fight in, and then you have cards that affect the kind of weapons you're able to use in that environment, too, but maybe off, because again, this is just...
I'll just say I played the first one. I'm very excited to get my hands on the second one as soon as I scrounge up the money for it. Being a fan of board games, I think you need to set some time aside and play some Hand of Fate. But let's hear what Dark Mika has to say about the second one. Hand of Fate 2, a hack and slash adventure card game. Honestly, I don't care much for card games, but this is something unique. Well, this and the first Hand of Fate anyways. I have to say, overall, it's a rather fun, interesting game. If you like the first game, this still has the same general concept behind it. You make a deck which gives you different weapons and armor bits, as well as different types of encounters, and you start a campaign where you might find those items in the campaign, along with whatever cards the dealer adds into the deck. A few cards are placed on the table to create a pathway where your token, that is your character, moves over one at a time. Each card flips over when you land on it, showing you what you've landed on, sometimes causing battles, sometimes letting you buy stuff. The game keeps that concept up, however, unlike the first game, each campaign allows you to take a different amount of cards instead of a uniform amount of cards across the whole game. Another addition is you get a companion you could bring with you who will fight with you, which is, well, not super useful as you tend to do much more damage. Some big changes between the first and second game.
That could be more likely.
Maybe that might impact how fun it is for people, positive or negatively. Fighting is a lot harder in this game. Dodging no longer avoids damage unless you completely avoid the weapon altogether. Blocking is harder instead of just pushing the button when the block shows up and the shield is still held up till the block is done. This game has you actively flick your shield to block, which means you can push it too early or late much more easily as the shield doesn't just stay there till the block is done. Enemies are a lot harder to beat because their attacks are stronger and have much higher defense. Many even have shields. A big positive, to me at least, is that they added a new main character to the game. You still have the man from the previous game, but now you can choose your character's sex in this one. You could play as him or as a new woman. You can even choose one of a few races for each. Beyond that, all of the mechanics are the same as the first game. Graphics have been improved greatly, especially the characters and arenas you show up to fight in. They're all really good looking. The audio is the same. I also heard it is enhanced for the Xbox One X, so it has the 4K goodness there as well.
That does sound like a pretty fun game. Like I said, it sounds like I was on a bit regarding like how I described the first game, but I didn't realize that the dealer adds monsters as opposed to like the locations and stuff. Like after he was like, okay, here's a location, and that location includes what types of monsters will be there and whatever.
Yeah. But there are a few drawbacks, but they're personal issues that not everyone will care about. Transitions between areas, like between the board and the arena, have bright colors that shift and change color rather quickly. Hurts my eyes, makes me feel a bit ill, might set off seizures in a few people. And the other item is vibration can't be turned off in this one. I turn vibration off in everything because it hurts my hands. This is mostly an issue in fights. There's some slowdown every now and then, and the game has the option to unlock the frame rate, which sometimes causes massive slowdown if it's checked, which it is by default. My suggestion, if it's on a crappy PC or on the Xbox One or on the Xbox One S, unchuck it so it is locked. On the X or on a really good PC, maybe leave it checked for super high frame rates. For $30, yeah, totally worth it. You'll get way, way more than 60 hours worth of fun out of this game. If you've not played either of them, I'd suggest the first one. It's not necessary to play this one as it's two separate stories with a very minor link between them. The dealer mentions the previous game, but that's about it. The first game and its one DLC is $22. If you like that, you'll love this one just as readily. I think both had an interesting story and really cool gameplay. I hope this company and these games do well because I'd love to see more of these in the future. It was really fun, and I know myself will buy any future DLC they put out for this new game. I love it, and I'm pretty sure that I probably will put over 100 hours into each of these games easily. Hopefully you all enjoy them too.
That is glowing as glowing gets.
That is.
And I gotta admit, I like the fact that it turned out to be good, because like you said, Hand of Fate and Hand of Fate 2 have a premise to them that are, in this climate, very unique premises. Like, you can't think of any other games that work that way, can you? I don't think you can, because I sure as hell can.
Yeah, and even crazier, at least for me, is I know Dark Mika is not a fan of more expensive games. Like, she wants cheaper than cheap can get, and for $30 for her to give a glowing, like, buy this game for a $30 game, I know what I'm getting as soon as I get money.
That's what's up.
Yeah, I love the first game. I've been dying for the second one to come out. When it got delayed for the Xbox, I was so bummed, but it sounds like the wait was worth it.
And yeah, it might have factored into them adding the 4K support too, so.
Possible. I don't know how long that stuff takes, but anyway, one more game to talk about with you, and that is called Crimson Land, developed and published by our good friends at 10 Tons. It released November 24th on the Nintendo Switch for $13.99. Cult classic arena twin stick shooter. Thousands of aliens, mutant lizards, and more are on the attack. Can you survive the onslaught? Purnell, did you survive?
Actually, yes. I survived the hell out of it.
I call bullshit. You died.
I'm just that damn good, man. Don't knock my skills.
It's Crimson Land. Everybody dies in Crimson Land. It's a fact.
No, you're thinking Zombie Land. Everyone dies in boredom. I mean, sorry, kid. I like that movie. I'm just being a jerk. But Crimson Land was good. Like, it was, when I heard about this game and booted it up, my first thought was people know about it, but you don't hear about it these days, was, I made a game with zombies in it, which is a top down twin stick shooter where enemies are coming in from both sides, from all sides of the screen, and all the characters are very diminutive in size. And your goal is just to literally blow crap the hell up. Like, nothing more to it than that. As you play the game though, this game has a bit more features to it than, say, that game did. For example, every time there's a quest mode in the game, and as you play through each stage on quests consisting of 5 worlds, each world having 10 stages, each of those having 3 difficulty levels. As you play through each quest level and complete it, you unlock new guns that can show up in the main game. And the guns have different stats relating to, like, clip rump size, power, speed of fire, and, like, reload ability. And the goal for that is just to basically play through each of these different campaigns. And all they are is just, here's a map. Here are some enemies that are coming at you. Kill them. Good job. You win. And then each time they might add like a new type of enemy to it. And they just kind of eventually start combining all of them together until you're playing something akin to like Zombies Ate My Neighbors, or now you're fighting like every type of damn enemy you've seen throughout the game in one map. Which is a good thing, though. I like that. And another component about that, the way the game plays, is that every time you... There's like a sort of experience bar where it's basically, like the, I just call it the carnage bar. I made the name up. As you kill certain guys, enough guys, you build up a bar and then you eventually level up. And when you do, the game will allow you to get one of four perks. You choose one. And the perks are literally all over the freaking place. There's one where you just basically build up steam and then eventually release bullets. There's another one where you have like toxic bullets that can like poison guys. There's another one where, what was it? You can fire bullets even after you've run out of ammo, but when you do so, your score takes a penalty for it. There's one where it just lets you suck items to you, and it just goes on and on. And as you're playing through quest mode, again, you unlock more perks that you can use, that you can find and unlock during different level ups. Now, these aren't persistent in quest mode. It's only per map when you level up until the level's over. Once you've beaten the level, you have to level up from scratch again for the next stage. But if you want a full-on survival mode, well, that's what survival mode is for. Once you've played enough of quest mode to acquire different unlocks of guns and perks and actually different modes in survival mode, such as, you know, ammo or gun type challenges, you then proceed to survival, which is literally play till you die. Now, this ends up being a pretty interesting concept when you think about it, because being that the main game is still fun, it's again, it's like a fun mindless shooter, it's what you want. You want to have a fun time blowing crap up. But with the survival mode, it lets you take all that stuff into one mode that can go on ad nauseum. So whereas in quest mode, you may end up getting like maybe three or four perks before the level's over and then you start from scratch. Survival mode, if you're good enough, sky's the damn limit. And all of a sudden, certain perks, like ones where it just gives you 5,000 experience points right off the top, suddenly those perks make a bit more sense, because now, again, you might want that 5,000 ASAP to get a real perk. Yeah. Instead of the three that they offered you in that specific selection period.
The glory of random stuff popping up.
Mm-hmm. It actually works out in this game, I think. And well, it's... What we said?
I was going to say, I'm glad to hear that the game pretty much sounds unchanged from the other platforms. How well does it play on the Switch? Because I know on other platforms, things could get hectic. There could be a lot of shit going on the screen. A lot of corpses, a lot of monsters. Does it hold up on the Switch, and does it play well?
Well, what I can say is, as a guy who, honestly, I'm like one of the few Switch owners that never uses it on his TV. I always handheld it, unless the game requires it. But I played it on my handheld mode, and there's no stuttering, no slowdown. I've had no problems. The only time I had slowdowns when I'm pretty sure it was intentional, like using the reflex perk. That's the only time. So the game holds up well. No complaints. Nice.
I'm really hoping this one does well for 10 tons. This is one of my favorite 10 ton shooters. I know they've pretty much dumped nearly their entire back catalog on the Switch over the past few months. And a lot of their newer games like Judge or Xenoraid can easily overshadow Crimson Land, but I still love just the chaos and the simplicity of Crimson Land. So I want to know from you, $14. What are your thoughts on this one on the Switch?
As far as the Switch goes, this is probably the best twin-stick shooter that I've seen announced for it so far. So if you're looking for a twin-stick shooter, it's worth a pickup.
Awesome. Sounds good. I'm going to guess you haven't played Judge yet, so you should probably look into that one.
Judge, huh?
Yes. Spelled with a Y.
What kind of stylish weirdness is that?
J-Y-D-G-E.
Let's spell fire with a Q.
Hey, if you want.
I don't know how I could. It makes no sense. Hey, you want to go play? You want to go play Puddle? It's spelled with J's. whatever. I don't know.
But yeah, if you enjoyed Crimson Land, I would definitely check out. 10 Tons has a lot of fantastic games on the Switch. Neon Chrome is another good one. And then, even their puzzle games like Sparkle is really good. Tennis in the Face just came out, which is a fantastic one. I fucking love that game.
Well, the name is solid.
It really isn't that a fantastic name?
Tennis in the Face.
Tennis in the Face. And that one's only $5, so you should buy that one like tonight.
Oh, wow. Don't mind if I do. He's just reaching to my wallet here. Let me stop. I need to spend more time.
Pernell, always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts about any of those games to wrap this up?
I think I'm pretty on point. Just like I said, I think I like me some Crimson Land. I am going to see myself playing more of that. So that wasn't just a fluff buy. I think it's actually a game I want to continue to play post-review, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And so fire with a Q, right?
That's right. Pew, pew. Fire with a Q. Damn. Why do people do that with letters? Letters are there for a reason. They're meant to convey. I don't even know. Don't even you.
All right, next game to talk about is called Oh My Godheads, developed by Tattoo Attack, published by Square Enix, released December 5th on Xbox One, Steam, and PS4 for $14.99. Oh My Godheads is a fast and frenetic multiplayer fracas in which four players swing pointy swords, sling explosive pies, and celebrate the death of their foes with exuberant aplomb. Choose from a wide variety of characters before grabbing the Godhead and bringing it back to your base, while unleashing its wrath on you and those around you. Our friend Royal Sefton's covering this one. Royal, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Did you experience exuberant aplomb with this game?
It was quite a fracas. Was that the word?
That's a hell of a description they've got going for him.
It is. I could not have said it or written it better myself. That was beautiful.
So tell me, what is Oh My Godheads?
So it's a pretty good little couch game. You face off against up to three other players, or you can fill in those slots with CPU characters. And there are a few different games you can play. The biggest one is Capture the Head, and you're on one of a few different possible arenas, and you have to grab this gigantic godhead and put it on your what's the word? It's like a pedestal. And once you get it on there, you score a point. So, like, capture the flag. But each godhead has a certain behavior that works against you. Like, there's one that simply you cannot pick up. You have to roll it, which turns it into a game of soccer. And there's another one that if you hold it for too long, it will explode and kill you. And then there's another one that'll create a cloud of smoke around you so you can't see who's actually carrying it. Hmm. Is it your teammate? Is it your enemy? Who knows? So it's pretty quirky, you know, and kind of bring something a little new to the couch CTF mini genre. I don't know if that's really like a full blown genre, but
well, it's now. A good
couch game that way. Yes, yes, the couch CTF. Yeah. There's a few different game modes, but that's the biggest one. You also have yourself there's a Last Man Standing. There's one where the longer you hold the head, the more points you accumulate. So longest game wins. A few different ways to play.
Well, I know this is focused on a multiplayer game. Does this have any kind of content for single players?
Yeah, I mean you can plug in one to three different opponents. Played a little bit with my kids. Had them play with each other. And I think they gave it their thumbs up because they were hooting, hollering, and screaming, and they would they'd either face off in each other, against each other, which would turn into a big ugly fight, and then they'd start yelling at each other. Or if I convinced them, you know, hey, you guys be on the blue team, make the computer be on the red team, then you know they had a good time with that. So yeah, I mean, if you're playing by yourself, you do have the ability to play against the CPU. I gotta say, the AI not the sharpest.
No.
So. You know, yeah, I mean, you can, but it's going to be a lot more fun with other players, definitely, because the AI is very predictable. It's not a real deep amount of strategy there. Just to give you an example, you know, in Capture the Head, you have your pedestals, or I forget the word. They call it something else, where you place the godhead, and then you have these spawn points right in front of it for the opposite team. So it's kind of like guarding a goal. Right. Well, if you wait there and just wait for the head carrying player to come by and you pick them off, you pick up the head, they'll spawn in front of theirs. They can pick you off and you just go back and forth, play Pong all day with them if you don't change it up a little bit. But you have the ability to throw explosive pies or to dash. And that's kind of where you can change it up a little bit.
And it's all about the pies, really, when you think about it.
Yes, I actually didn't know what it was that I was throwing. but I was playing as my favorite character in the game, Sir Fishelsworth, I think it was. It's a dapper penguin with a monocle. And I know, it's awesome. I love it. Some of the characters are just great. And you can throw this thing, and it's a pie, but at the time, I didn't know what the hell it was. All I knew is I threw it, and suddenly, if it hit somebody, they exploded, and they'd fly right out of the screen.
Nice.
I kept doing it, and they were on my team, and I felt very bad about it, because they would get pretty upset. But, yeah. It is all about the pies, really. And it'll measure your pie accuracy versus your sword accuracy versus your dash accuracy. You get a huge breakout of statistics when the round's over, too.
Nice. So, a fun party game, good for single players. Your kids enjoyed it. What kind of negatives besides the AI not being the brightest?
So, I mean, there are a few unlockables, a couple arenas and characters, but... You know, I don't see this being a game that we're going to put a lot of hours into. I don't feel like the depth of gameplay is quite there to justify, you know, more than a few hours here and there.
And is it something you could see yourself coming back to?
Yeah, probably.
So it's just you're not going to marathon.
Yeah, in terms of couch games, I mean, like, if you're really looking for one that's just going to be really, really, really epic and thick, this isn't quite it. You know, Overcooked is probably one of my favorite examples of that, where you actually have a lot more team cohesion and you also have a lot of arguing. It's hilarious. But in this game, there's not as much cooperation. I mean, you can kind of get that sort of thing out of the capture the head, where you can have somebody running interference while the other person carries the godhead. But it just doesn't feel quite deep enough that you're going to, yeah, like you say, marathon it. But it's good for a quick pickup game.
Nice. So overall, for $15, what are your thoughts on Oh My Godheads?
It's definitely a try it. I can't quite give it a buy it because, like I said, the depth of it isn't there. But if you get it on sale, like if you catch it on like a $5 special or something, yeah, totally. I think it'd be fun.
Nice and good for parties.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. Awesome. You know, again, as long as your expectations aren't that this is going to be the game that you invest 50 hours in, you become awesome at. No, it's not like that.
Well, for $15, sure. I wouldn't really expect to invest 50 hours into a game, but you never know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a kick. We had fun.
Cool. Well, Royal, thanks as always for coming on and chatting about this game. I'm eager to give it a try myself. Do you have any final thoughts on it?
Fracas with Fischelsworth. Sir Fischelsworth.
Next game to talk about is called Blue Angels Aerobatic Flight Simulator, developed and published by Rortos SRL. Released December 1st on Xbox One for $14.99, previously on Steam. Experience flight at 400 miles an hour, just 18 inches from your partner's wing, and face the challenge of official maneuvers aboard FA-18 fighter jets and a C-130 transport aircraft. Do you think you're really an expert? Become part of the Blue Angels team. Try the simulator licensed by the U.S. Navy. We have our friend Cole Martin covering this one. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing all right. Are you excited to talk about some Blue Angels?
Yeah, we could say that.
So what is this game?
This is a realistic flight simulator. If you are not familiar with the Blue Angels, they are exceptional pilots who are with the Air Force. Is it the Air Force?
Or I don't know.
Navy. And their entire purpose is to put on these shows and basically to recruit people to come fly for them. They show off military aircraft at air shows all across the country. And so this game is a simulation of those shows. When you first launch it, you actually have the option to go into playing, or you can check out a schedule of Blue Angel shows. There's just one problem with that schedule. It spans from March 2016 to November 2017. So I hope you don't actually want to go see any of those shows.
Well, maybe they're just releasing it because are those shows that you get to reenact, maybe?
No. This is like the game. You said it was previously on Steam, but it started its life on Android. Uh-huh. And it was an Android app. And so they ported it from Android to Steam and then from Steam to Xbox, which is fine. We see that a lot. But nowhere in that porting process did that schedule get updated, which is kind of a shame because it's really neat. I'm imagining, you know, if you're a fan of the Blue Angels and what they do, that would be a really useful tool to load up the schedule like that if it were dynamic.
Yeah. I'm looking, the Steam version came out in August, so I guess even then the schedule was
pushing it.
Mostly outdated.
Yeah. So it spans from March 2016 to November 2017. And I tried to like force it to update and everything. And it's just what it is. unfortunately. So once you've been disappointed by that, you can move on and actually play the game. There are some little extras in there. You can actually load up a screen which lets you read biographies of the pilots for the Blue Angels. You get to learn a little bit about them, where they're from, what kind of training they have to be qualified for this. The game itself is pretty simple. You have training missions, if you will, to start with. And this is where you learn the maneuvers that you will be carrying out in your plane, depending on where you're doing the show at and what kind of maneuvers you'll be doing. Depends on what kind of plane you'll fly. And like you said, it goes from all the way from the C-130 to the F-18 to the Fat Alberts. And there's a healthy selection of planes, but you don't get to control which plane you're flying.
So I guess based on the mission, it changes up what you're doing?
Yeah, depending on what where you're at and you know, what kind of tricks you'll be doing and whether you're doing them alone or as part of a squad. Once you actually start and you're going to practice your maneuvers, you get to choose between easy, medium, and hard. Easy mode has autopilot on, and the path of the maneuver is laid out with green ribbons. And basically, you just need to stay within those green ribbons. The longer you fly without fucking anything up, then the higher of a point multiplier you'll get. If you start to like veer off the path or whatever, the ribbons will start to become orange and then red to let you know you're fucking things up.
So stop fucking things up, pretty much.
Yeah, stop fucking things up. Get back on path. Because if you're doing that during a maneuver and, you know, an air show, that could be life and death for yourself and your squad that you're flying with. Because as you said, you are within just inches of each other's planes when you're flying as a squad. If you're playing on medium, you do still have some autopilot. It will help keep you locked to that ribbon, but it's not as overwhelming as if, you know, like when you're playing on easy with autopilot on, you can complete maneuvers without even touching the controller. It will just do everything for you, with the exception of sometimes the maneuver will require that you gear up or gear down. Or it may require that you use one of the rudders. I'd love to tell you more technical terms for that. I don't have them.
Me neither.
But you know when you need to use those during a maneuver, because like there will be a purple ribbon alongside the green, and it will also flash on the side. So even if you're an absolute flying dumbass like me, you can still manage it, especially in easy, because the autopilot just literally does 95% of it for you.
Nice.
So you can.
I was going to say, going in this as a casual Blue Angels fan, I guess, since, you know, we're more casual newcomers to this game and to this organization, is it fun?
Yeah, actually, it kind of was, especially when you get into the more advanced maneuvers. And these are actual. Now, some of the maneuvers are like there's a little artistic license involved, but most of them are actual official maneuvers that they carry out during their shows. So once you get to learn the more advanced maneuvers and you feel comfortable enough taking the training wheels off and just trying it for the sake of trying it, it's actually really enjoyable. It's not even frustrating or anything. It's just like, okay, I did it or I didn't. Start again if I failed. One of the other added benefits that kind of it makes it a little more enjoyable is that when you are performing the air shows, you get to set up your own air shows. If you want to, you can go in and decide which maneuvers are going to happen, where you're going to perform at, how long are you going to do it solo, or are you going to do it as a squad, are you going to mix it up? You have that kind of control. And there are 5 different locations, ranging from Reno to Baltimore, that you can choose from. Graphically, though, I have to say, I kind of felt like they had used Google satellite images for the actual, like, area below you. It feels a little disjointed with the planes. The planes aren't as realistic, and yet there's almost like a photorealism quality because of the satellite type imagery. That you just like, it feels a little weird. When you're flying in or you're getting ready to take off, you're just, it does feel a little disjointed. And that's kind of, that was the first moment that it was like jumping out at me like, this was a mobile game. And I am not one of those people who goes, I don't need mobile games on it. No, fuck it. I like any kind of game to come to Xbox. Yeah, you know, give us more.
Games are games.
But that was the first time I kind of like leaned back a little and was like, whoa, that's a mobile game.
On the bright side, it's not a super expensive game. So for $15, what is your verdict on Blue Angel's Aerobatic Flight Simulator?
I give it a pretty solid try. It's not going to be for everybody. And given that it is a simulator, when you're playing it on hard, it can actually be really damn hard. But, you know, even for casual players, if you just want to set it on easy, or if you want to dick around and make your own maneuvers and pop them into the middle of a Blue Angels air show, you can do that. And it's fun.
Sounds good. Well, Cole, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this. I know you'll be back on again very soon. Any final Indeed. Thoughts to sum it up?
Nope, never have anything special to say.
All right, and finally tonight, we are going to talk about 2 more Switch games with our good friend Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. My lungs totally aren't full of hell dust from my job.
Hell dust.
Yeah.
As a
the dust,
a solid
the dust
name.
From hell. Yeah, yeah.
But you have more Switch games to talk about. And let's start off with Letter Quest Remastered, developed by Bacon Bandit Games, published by Digirati Distribution. It released November 23rd on the Switch for $14.99. The Grim Reapers, Grim and Rose need your help to defeat a legion of monsters, ghosts, and evil bunnies using the power of words. Spell words to battle monsters and earn gems that can be used to purchase upgrades, books, special items, potions, and much more. Use your linguistic skills to survive. Chris, did you survive?
I did indeed survive. Yay. I survived many a linguistic battle. yeah, so this game was really, really good. Basically, it's a... I want to say it's probably the most, like, puzzle quest. Like, that classic, you know, super addictive, bejeweled sort of light. Only instead of playing Bejeweled for your battles, you are playing, I don't know, I guess you could just say it's Scrabble, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. You have a field of letters, and it's a 4x4, I think. I think it's 16 letters. I've already forgotten. But it's a collection. Yeah, I know. It's a collection of letters in a field, and you can pick any of those letters to spell out a word, and the longer the word... the more damage you'll do to the enemy. Also, it like Scrabble, it's certain letters actually can have a 2 or 3 rarity rating. So if you have a rarer letter, it counts for more than just long words. So, yeah, being erudite is key. And especially knowing your Q-U-A words.
Oh, yeah.
But, oh, yeah. And so... if that wasn't good enough, which honestly that would have been, I would have been fine with that. But if that wasn't enough, then you also have a really, really large amount of upgrades that you can do for your character. Not only can you get better weapons and weapons that have different effects, and like you can buy potions, you can buy the capacity to carry more potions, you can increase stats, you can do all this other cool stuff with jewels that you collect by playing and or replaying stages. Each stage has 4 difficulty levels that you can tackle, and which was confusing at first because it took me until like the end of the first boss for the game to tell me, oh, by the way, the star that you get is not an indicator of how well you did. It's just what difficulty you're playing on, and you can adjust that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I thought I was doing really badly. I thought I was getting 1 star on every stage. And I was like, well, fine. So that's that thing a little bit out of the way. But yeah, it's just all about playing through levels and fighting enemies and bosses and collecting jewels and collecting upgrades and then going through and doing it all again. And the enemies, like on top of just matching letters, because obviously while it would be enough if you just match letters and, you know, swapped hits with the opponent, they go a little step further, and occasionally an enemy will infect the board somehow. So you've got letters that get poisoned, so you can't use them or else you will take damage. But if you absolutely like have this killer word, then you can totally do that and take the hit. You know, it's kind of a strategy thing. Some letters get turned to stone where you just absolutely can't use it, no question, for 3 turns. As well as there's an opportunity to get bonuses while you play if your word is especially awesome. So yeah, it's just like, it's just a super solid, like, RPG, puzzle game, word game hybrid. And, like, those are 3 of my favorite things. So this game is, like, 3 of my favorite things, basically.
I agree. I covered this one last year on the Xbox, and God, I was addicted to this game. It's one of the few games, like, since we've been doing reviews on this show, that I made sure to get every single achievement in the game.
Whoa. Yeah, I was feeling that. I obviously didn't have enough time to do that this time before this review, but this is definitely one I'm going to go back through and play as much as possible. Which, actually, I kind of did that with King Oddball. Like, I went back. I've almost beaten the game now. I'm only a few levels away.
Nice.
So, yeah.
But Letter Quest Remastered, $15. What is your verdict?
$15. I mean, if you're going to drop money on any indie game that, you know, as far as like games that, if you're looking to get like the most for your $15, this is definitely it. You have to, of course, like, word searches and Scrabble and, things like that, but I literally can't think of a world where anybody doesn't like that stuff. So,
I mean, terrible people out there.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, even if you're bad at it, it's like, you know, you just level up enough and even those little words will affect things.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're restricted to where an enemy will only be affected if you use 4 letters. So it can only be 4 letter words, no more, no less. So that's really cool, too. It has like those special challenges. But yeah, like if the idea of a word puzzle RPG sounds good to you, this is absolutely a must buy, because a lot of effort and work and love went into this game. So do definitely pick it up.
All right. Sounds good. And then the final game to talk about tonight is called Stick It to the Man, developed and published by Zoink Games. This one also released November 23rd on the Switch. This one for $11.99. Hard hat tester Ray has a bizarre accident and wakes up with a giant pink spaghetti arm sticking out of his brain. With his awesome new powers, he could read minds and change the world with stickers, but he's on the run for a crime he didn't commit. Can you help Ray out of this sticky situation? Chris, did you help?
Yeah, maybe I helped. I don't know. Like,
you attempted.
I attempted. I bet that the actual getting the thing off of your head is part of the end game, I should think, because it's pretty important for actually playing the game. Okay, so this is a game where I feel the descriptions and available data on the game, like, criminally undersell it. Like, so I'm here to oversell it. So there's a few things to this. One, the artwork looks really, really great, like, in motion, because everybody is like a paper cutout kind of thing, and the way they talk is like the top of their head kind of bounces onto the bottom of their head, like Terrence and Phillip on South Park, if you remember,
yeah.
Like that style. And all the backgrounds are like this really, they're like really well drawn, but they also look like it's literally a camera following along this diorama of like all these paper cutouts of things. So it's actually got a really, really good look to it. And I think that that doesn't show as well in the pictures as it does in the actual game. Secondly, probably the biggest selling point of this game, without going into the action, which we will, but all of the dialogue in this game is written by none other than Ryan North, which, if you don't know him, like probably the thing you would most likely know him from are the infamous Dinosaur comics, which is that's a web comic that's been going on for like, God, I don't know, 15 years. I followed it on LiveJournal. That's how old it is.
Oh, wow.
And it's thousands and thousands of funny comics, all made with the same six panels. Like this one guy, this Canadian guy called Ryan North, wrote jokes for, you know, definitely over a decade, utilizing the same like six instances of clip art in the same order. And so that should let you know how talented this guy is at writing. The dialogue in this game is absolutely superb. I've hardly ever, let's say, played through a video game that's like so dialogue heavy that makes nerdy references and like just makes other kind of absurd observations and kind of not fourth wall breaking, but just like really humorous, like self-awareness jokes,
mm-hmm.
As well as this game. I mean, it's up there, possibly even past like Psychonauts and Grim Fandango and like any of your Double Fine sort of games. Like this game is really, really well done for humor. I was laughing quite a lot, and like, you know, it's all like bizarre stuff, and like the references are even bizarre. Like there's a guy. Okay, I should describe the actual gameplay before I get into this one instance. So
that'll work.
What? Yeah. So you're Ray, and yeah, like you get hit in the head on your way home one time where you're doing some like tutorial style platforming, and he makes the quip that's like, I keep forgetting how many jumps I have to do to like get to my home, things like that. And an alien sort of thing, you know, falls out of an airplane, hits him on the head, and then he wakes up in the hospital where they kick him out immediately because he doesn't have proper insurance. And then the bandage comes off and reveals that he now has, well, no, actually he has a coma dream, and you get to play through the tutorial level in his own brain where he dreams of a giant robot him. And then that's kind of where you learn the ropes of the game, which is to say, it's a platformer. It's definitely this sort of action stealth game where you run around and avoid enemies and all this other stuff. But the main, let me start over. So the action is that not only are you running around and dodging stuff and making your way through the thing, but the arm that's extended out of your head, you actually use the stick and the ZR button to target like things that you can grab onto and propel yourself to a higher level. So that's kind of what they advertise. But what they don't mention is that also the game is kind of a point and click puzzle game. So you have these instances where, for one, you can actually read other people's minds with your mind by using the left trigger button to go into psychic mode, and then you can grab onto everybody's brain and like it does dialogue, internal dialogue, and they kind of broadcast their wants. And then in the real world, of course, you go out and find the thing that they're looking for, usually some bizarre thing, because it's, you know, point and click adventures like Sierra, you know, definitely have that history. And you grab the obscure thing that they want and then bring it back to them, and then that that allows you to go forward. So it's both a platformer with kind of legit like stealth action, and then it's also a point and click puzzle game. So that's kind of amazing. And as I mentioned before, one of the characters is so you're supposed to rescue him from the trunk of a mobster's car, because the mobster is trying to win a dance contest, and so Yeah, so you had the, and by the way, this is all for the purpose of getting the mobster's teeth, because the girl he's dancing with left this one guy who you meet in dire straits, and he needs better teeth so he can win her back. So this is how these puzzle, point-and-click puzzle games work. And so you have to rescue this other dancer to bring him back to the dance contest so that the, you know, mobster can lose. And so in the trunk of the car, he's in there struggling with his thoughts, and most of what he's thinking about is specifically Silver Surfer on the NES. Like, he's sitting there, like, saying, you know, oh, now these mobsters are going to kill you. You never saw the world. You never ate caviar, and you never beat the Silver Surfer game for the NES.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And he just goes on and on about this game. And like, then he like casually mentions it once you like save him in conversation. But like, it's clear that he keeps thinking about it. And so it's like, it's things like that, that I'm like, this is one of those games that I would go around and shout from the rooftops for everybody to download and play this, because it is so super well done. But I don't feel like if you just look at the game's advertising that it's going to be quite as awesome as like once you actually start playing it.
Yeah. I know Zoink makes awesome games. They also have the game Zombie Vikings. Pretty sure they announced that one will be coming to the Switch eventually. That one is fantastic. And then one of their new games coming out is called Flipping Death, which is, I think, going to be coming out first on Switch, and then it might hit other platforms later, but that one looks insane as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really glad these guys are doing more stuff. And like I said, I'm really happy to be seeing Ryan North doing stuff outside of his comic, because he's a classic writer as far as that goes, as far as internet humor goes.
Yeah, but it's definitely good to see Zoink getting their games on the Switch. And I got to know, $12, what is your official verdict on Stick It to the Man?
Absolutely. Go ahead and get this one. I don't care what you like. Just go ahead and get it. You're going to enjoy this game. It's I can't think of a person who wouldn't like this.
Nice. Sounds good. Well, Chris, always good having you on the show, chit-chatting about games. Everybody else, stick around. I will be back in just a couple of moments with Mick Waits of Four Horses to chat about the game Kid Trip. Chris, do you have any final thoughts to sum this all up?
Keep your stick on the ice and stay away from hell dust.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. I am joined at this time, calling all the way from the UK, Mick Waits of Four Horses. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm fine. How's yourself?
It's a good Sunday morning for me, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, it's quite pleasant here as well. We've had a week of pretty cold weather, and then today the sun's out. We've been down on the beach with my son this morning playing rugby, so yeah, it's really nice here.
Man, I can't think of the last morning I've been active in doing anything at all worthwhile.
I can't think of the last morning that I haven't been active. I'm an 11-year-old child, so not me personally. I have an 11-year-old child, so yeah, he's busy running around after him and all the things he does.
I was going to say, you've accomplished a lot as an 11-year-old.
Yeah, I've accomplished a lot as Four Horses as well.
So tell me, who is Four Horses? What is Four Horses? I know you guys just released the game Kid Trip on the Nintendo Switch. What is your company all about?
Well, Four Horses is me in disguise, basically. There is just me, nobody else. The company is based at my house. We don't really, I keep saying we as if we're a bigger company. I don't actually have even a dedicated room to the company. I work wherever I can in the house. I have a permanent day job doing software development completely away from games. But I've been a fan of playing games all my life. I've worked in the games industry for a bit on and off. And I developed my own game a while ago called Digger Dan, which I managed to get published through a different developer on DSi. And then I for fun, I converted it to 3DS when I could, and I was sat on that version for a while. Ended up with a little bit of money spare from the sale of our old house, and decided to set up Four Horses just so I could self-publish Digger Dan. That went all right. Enjoyed doing it. And long before I think long before I'd got the 3DS version of Digger Dan done, I'd been talking to Mike Burns, the creator of Kid Trip on iOS, about doing him a 3DS version of that. And finally this year we were able to get that done, get it published, and then along came Switch, and it's like, well, we're on one Nintendo platform, why not be on the other one as well? So I'm pretty pleased with that.
I do want to say I sympathize with you saying we in the fact that it's like the royal we of a collective of like our organization, because I've been alone on this show for a couple of months now. And when I send emails to people, I'm still like, we've been around, or like, we do this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just me. There is no we anymore.
From my point of view, I'm just trying to sound like I'm a professional, not some sort of bedroom programmer, which is essentially sort of what I am, I guess.
But, it's okay. I'm a living room podcaster, so we're in the same boat there. So you mentioned Kid Trip just came out. Tell me, what is this game? For the people who haven't played it, who don't know what it is, give us the sales pitch.
Well, the first thing I'd say about it is Kid Trip's too tough for you. You're not good enough to beat it. Sorry. Move on. Play an easier game. If you really, really like a challenge, if you really like those horrifically frustrating levels in Super Mario Odyssey that are really difficult and you keep falling to your death repeatedly and takes you a lot of effort to get through them, then Kid Trip might just be for you, because it is absolutely rock hard. It's a very short game. There's only 20 levels, and each level can be beaten in under 30 seconds. But you're not going to beat them in under 30 seconds, not until you've played them through quite a few times. I think my first playthrough took me well over 2 hours and about 250 lives, if I remember right. And I think that's fairly typical. I tend to consider myself as quite good at games. Although someone who reviewed it recently did manage to beat in 45 minutes. I was absolutely shocked.
Good Lord.
But yeah, it's tough as nails. It's a platform game. However, the character also runs because it's got its roots on iOS. So think Mario Run, but extremely difficult. You can alter your speed slightly, so you can choose to run bit faster, throw rocks at enemies to bash them out of the way, and then just jump your way past all the obstacles. It's great fun. Really satisfying when you beat a level.
And you're not joking about the difficulty. I've had this game for a week or two now. I am awful. I feel so bad that like I'm still, I think, just stuck in world two.
Yeah, I know your pain. World 3, level 5, it makes me weep. It used to. It doesn't anymore. I'm not the only one. I know people have done this on iOS, but I've actually beaten the game legitimately in a single life on the 3DS version, on the published 3DS version, not my cheated development version.
What kind of fun cheats do you have in this development version?
To be fair, I don't have too many fun cheats, but one I do have is the ability to continue from pretty much anywhere in a level. Anywhere is a checkpoint. So what happens is I start the level and it records my inputs. So I keep playing, and if I lose a life, when the level restarts, I just don't touch it, and it plays through my previous input. So when it gets to just before I lost a life, I then take over again, and that way I've essentially built up a recording of every level completed in a single life with all achievements earned along the way. And that's used as a testing basis so that then when I port to a new platform, whatever, I can just load up those files and say, go play. And it goes off and it plays from start to finish. I can check that things work. Possibly put some of the cheats in during development, but none that really stuck around. I think more just start at a particular level, things like that, all levels unlocked at the start. But yeah, it's actually quite a while since I worked on it now, so I forget very quickly.
I'm incredibly jealous of your developer cheats, because I want to beat the game, but I'm not good enough.
Well, there's one thing we discussed with the guy from Rainy Frog, who kindly published the game for us in Japan. He suggested, because he absolutely loves the play from start to finish for me cheat, because that helped him with his testing as well. and he suggests that we actually put that in there as an unlockable. If when people beat the game, they can sort of, myself and Mike, record our runs through the game and then have those as unlockable, so you can watch the developers play it, essentially.
And is there a way to watch that in the game?
Well, there could be. There isn't at the minute, but I am. I mean, the sales on Switch have been really good. Really pleased with them. It outsold the 3DS. I mean, the 3DS version's been out 4 months. It outsold the 3DS in 4 days.
Wow!
So yeah, we're very happy with that, and the fans seem to like it. People seem to like the game, so we'd just like to add a bit more. I should have put tutorials in from the start. I know I should have put tutorials in. I planned to. But then I got diverted working on Star Ghost, and it was getting a bit late for getting the Switch version out, so we just put it out the same as the 3DS one. So I'm planning to do an update, putting the tutorials in. I'd like to put the HD Rumble in there, a couple of other little things. There's a couple more achievements that are just utterly evil that I'm probably going to add.
You dick.
Thank you. I take pride in that. I'm thinking of putting one in there for complete the game in just one life and complete the game throwing only one stone, both of which are possible, both of which are exceptionally difficult to do.
You could beat the game throwing a single stone.
Yeah, there's one point in level 5, world 4, I think it's level 3 on there, where there's you're sort of in a cave of spikes above you, spikes below you, and a snake. And if it wasn't for that damn snake, you could beat the game without throwing a single stone.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I just spam stones every time I see an enemy.
Oh, me too. I like to see how many I can get on screen at once.
Oh, man. I really didn't think that you could beat so many stages without throwing any rocks.
Yeah. Yeah. All the stages were sort of designed to be completed just with run and jump. At full speed as well, without slowing down. In fact, it's a little bit easier to play when you're running at full speed than it is when you're running slowly, although it seems counterintuitive, but the levels were sort of designed like that.
Are there levels that you need to be running to complete?
100% yes. Definitely in World 5. Yeah, no spoilers, but yeah, some things right behind you, and if you slow down, you're got.
So is this one of those games where it's best to go into the settings and just change the default to run?
Yeah, I think it is. Again, there's something more we want to do around the controls. We're considering possibly trying to find a way that the user can fully configure them so they can put whatever buttons where they like. But running, definitely. If you're brave enough, go in there, just get it set right from the start.
I might have to do that. Because I've hit a couple of sections where I'm like, I don't know if I just need to hold the jump button longer, if I need to run here. So maybe if I just switch it to running, and it's like finally using that fifth button in Rock Band where you just need to get over that hump.
Yeah.
So just switch it to run and you'll magically be better at the game.
Quite possibly.
So the game has been out just a little bit on the Switch so far. What's the reception been like?
Really positive. I've had so many requests for review codes. It's been hard to keep up. Reviews generally seem to be quite positive. I think all reviews have been fair so far. In any criticisms, one that keeps recurring seems to be the game's quite short, but then that's always counterbalanced by, but it's also really cheap. And I mean, the pricing was deliberate. Obviously, it came from iOS, where it's hard to sell any game for money at all. Mm-hmm. If you then package the same game on a console and put a price tag on it, it seems there's some people just can't seem to accept that that's how it should be. But you know, developers have families; we've got to feed them. So, but yeah. It is a short experience, or it can be if you're good at it, but the price, I think, is totally fair.
But no one is good at it.
That one person, I was incredulous. I don't normally do this. If someone comes back with a review and there's any sort of negativity about it, I'll just accept it. If that's how they saw the game. But when he said he beat it in 45 minutes, I had to ask if he'd played it on any other platforms, because I almost couldn't believe it. But no, genuine first playthrough, beat in 45 minutes.
That is insane.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent more than that on one level.
I think I spent more than that on one level before the show today, because yeah, I wanted to get further in the game, and I'm terrible. I don't know what happened in my 36 years of life. I don't know what happened to my video game skills, but I'm not what I used to be.
Well, I've got 10 more years on you there, and I've beaten Crash Bandicoot first time round on the remastered, despite the difficulty level. I can beat those, and Kid Trip still took me a lot of time.
Well, I know a couple of years ago on this show, we were talking, I think there was something we were doing called like 4 for February, where we were supposed to take games that we've never beaten and just finish them in February. And for the longest time, I never beat the original Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, really?
It was right. Always that very last Hammer Brother in 8-4 that killed me.
Right.
Right before Bowser. But I did it on this show a couple years ago. So, nice. So I still have a little bit of skills in me, just not many when they matter.
My microphone's going for a wander. Right.
I have no idea what that was.
Yeah, just now my microphone was sliding for some reason. I was sat up on my bed. This is how little of an office I have. I'm actually sat on my bed because my wife and child are noisy downstairs.
Were you just like, Daddy has to go do a terrible podcast interview now?
We've never used the word terrible.
It was implied, though.
No, absolutely not. I like doing these.
Do you? What's your favorite part about doing interviews?
Just getting a show off. There's a lot of cool stuff about being a developer and having hardware that people don't have, and the ability to muck about with things on secret hardware. And on the secrets you can keep, they're brilliant. The weirdest one was working on Starghost. The publisher, again, Rainy Frog, they publish it worldwide. They didn't want to announce it until really, really late. And I don't know the reasoning for that, but it meant all this time I was working on it completely in secret. Even my son didn't know what I was working on because he's 11. There's nowhere on earth he'd have kept quiet here at school.
So tell me, what is Starghost? I know one of my reviewers on the show, he's actually tackling that one for me. So I haven't played it myself. What is Starghost?
Well, Starghost's a very odd space-based shoot 'em up. I say very odd because it's unusual in the way you control it. And when I looked into it, because I'd had no idea what it was, to be fair. I'd missed it on the Wii U first time round. A lot of reviewers sort of likened it to Flappy Bird in the way you control the ship, because you sort of tap the button to go, but you don't tap it, you hold it. It's more jetpack-like. And I think the better reviewers have described it more like the flying barrel stages out of Donkey Kong Country. And I think they've picked that comparison because I don't know the original developer's name, but he's from Rare. He worked on the original Donkey Kong Country games. Hmm. It's got music by Dave Wise, I believe. It's got a really good soundtrack. And it's a fun sort of endless space shooter with really cool graphics and so, so many particle effects. I say that with some pain because Unity made a mess out of them when I upgraded to Switch. So it was absolute nightmare going around fixing them all. But yeah, so that's out now. I think it launched just this Thursday on Switch worldwide. I have no idea the price. It's
me neither. I wonder if I have it in my notes somewhere.
It's like I say, it's Rainy Frogs, baby. My involvement with that project's done, so anyone looking for review codes, don't be asking me, because I haven't got them.
I have it written down that it's $8.99.
Sounds fair.
That's what I have. I just cheat off my notes when I don't play something. I just go off what I have written down.
I believe it originated on iOS and definitely Wii U.
What kind of differences are there in working on Wii U compared to working on the Switch or working on 3DS or DSi to the Switch?
Well, I've not worked on the Wii U, so I can't really comment on that. It's from a day-to-day point of view, the Switch is so much nicer to work with than the 3DS because, it's a bit mundane, but it's faster. when you write some code on 3DS and hit the compile and send and run to the 3DS system, you can be waiting like a minute, which doesn't seem long, but if you just make a slight mistake, you have to go back and tweak something and run it again. It's a bit tedious waiting for it to start up, whereas the Switch, it's almost like developing straight on your PC. You compile and run it, it runs straight away, which is really nice. In terms of capabilities, obviously the Switch is streets ahead, but then the games I've worked on haven't exactly pushed the hardware to its limits. I mean, Kid Trip could run on a Super Nintendo if I knew I'd develop on one. the Switch is really nice. I can't see me moving away from it anytime soon. If I have any more ideas and more projects I can work on.
I just want to say I'm so happy that you use the term streets ahead.
Oh, it really is.
Because I haven't heard someone use that term in a number of years, and it makes me really miss the show community.
Right.
Oh, man. You mentioned earlier that you played Crash Bandicoot. What other kind of games are you playing these days?
Well, at the minute, it's all Mario Odyssey. The big problem I have is I just don't seem to have any spare time. It's as if having two jobs isn't very sensible. Yeah, really weird. So, yeah, I tend to like the sort of games Nintendo make, and I see Crash Bandicoot as being along the same sort of lines as that. It's a sort of game with fixed levels that you can then go back and get more out of, perfect them. I see a lot in common with Super Mario sort of level design in there. So, the minute on my Switch, obviously, there's been Zelda, there's been Mario Odyssey. I've got Rabbids, which I think I've completed about the first world in a bit, and then I've just not gone back to. I hope I do at some point, because I quite like that game. Metroid on the 3DS, but I can't think what else I've been playing a lot of, really. Beyond that, a little bit of Bomberman for some multiplayer fun and Mario Kart. But yeah, they're the sort of games I tend to like. I just don't have enough time for them. I'm quite big into Elite. I say I'm quite big into Elite Dangerous. I've not played it for about a year now. But yeah, I quite like that as well. I wanted to do a 3D Classics remake of Elite on the 3DS back when that was new, but I could never get through to the people who own the rights to the game to get that sorted, unfortunately. Huh. I would have loved that.
I miss 3D Classics. There were so many good games that came out, and then it just seems like Nintendo's been getting further and further away from the 3DS anymore.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they saw it as a mistake, because they had to do the whole, well, it's not suitable for kids under 7 at some point down the line, and then they started making the 2DS as a cheaper alternative, because there seemed to be so many people out there who were never that bothered about the 3D effects. I absolutely loved it. One of the things I've never liked is when people brought games to the system and never made any attempt to make use of the 3D. Mm-hmm. I think some of the 2D platform games, or just 2D games generally, I think looked really, really nice in 3D, even though they were sprite-based. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things with Kid Trip. When I took that under the system, there was no way on earth I would have ever put that out without 3D stereoscopic effects in that. And I think it looks really nice. It's a toss-up, to be honest, between the 3DS with its 3D effects and the Switch with its super bright, colourful screen, as to which version looks nicer in my mind. But, yeah. It's a shame to see the end of the 3DS. I think a number of independent developers are sort of saying that their sales figures on 3DS have been a little disappointing lately since the Switch is out. And I think it is really putting those final nails in its coffin. It'd be interesting to see if Nintendo do replace it.
It really feels like everyone is starting to flock to the Switch. It seems like the 3DS is getting left behind, the Vita's getting left behind, and the Switch is just, like, the console that everybody's flocking towards right now.
Yeah, I never saw it as a portable either. I never really saw it as something that I would see as replacing my 3DS, and I don't think it does replace my 3DS, to be fair, even though I'm not playing my 3DS that much. But I would never generally take it with me on a day-to-day basis and, say, play it at lunchtime at work, which I have done with my 3DS. But then I really do appreciate being able to pick it up and take it with me every now and then. For example, we're off around to our relatives tonight for food, and we'll probably take it with us just so we can play more Mario Odyssey.
I was going to say, why mingle with family when you could collect moons?
Absolutely. They'll just be watching Strictly Come Dancing anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, there's priorities in life. Mario comes first.
Absolutely, that's so right.
How good is Odyssey, by the way?
I really like it. I was slightly worried from the original trailers of it. The areas that you run around in looked like maybe they were a bit small, and they didn't show off too many of them, so I was a little concerned that maybe there wouldn't be enough content in the game when it came out. Yeah, that was a mistaken point of view. I haven't looked at how many hours I've spent on it, but it's quite a few, and I've only just beaten Bowser, and now I'm going around mopping up all the extras. So I'm enjoying it. There's lots of nice little things in there that I appreciate, little clever things, little throwbacks to previous games. So good. Really enjoying it.
I love all the different outfits you could get in the game. There is some ridiculous costumes you could wear.
Mario running around in Peach's wedding dress. You can't beat that.
Absolutely. That was worth buying the Peach amiibo for.
Yeah, 100%. And Mario, Gold Mario as well, is really good.
Yeah. There's some really cool amiibo unlock costumes in there, and I think you could unlock all them normally, right?
I certainly some of them. We've got the Doctor's outfit, and we've not got Dr. Mario, and you get given his wedding suit as you arrive at the last level, I believe. But it's good. It's clever. I like the use of the amiibo as well for helping you find missing things. That's nice. It's nice sending a guardian from Legend of Zelda out to find a missing moon for you. It's like, go be useful instead of killing Link all the time.
Or unlocking stuff in Breath of the Wild.
Yes. Yes.
it's been crazy how this has just been Nintendo's year between Zelda and Mario. It feels like no other company matters anymore.
Yeah, I remember when the Wii was first revealed. And I saw a picture of the controller, and I thought, it's one of those jokey mock-ups that people keep doing on the internet. Oh, Nintendo's new controller with just one button on it that says Win. And I thought that's what it was when I first saw the Wii revealed, and I was totally incredulous, and then the absolute runaway success of that console. And I was still a bit, I was similar when the Switch was revealed. It's like, oh, I don't really like the name for starters, and it's like, is this really what the public wants? This whole detachable controls? It seems a bit weird. And obviously, I bought one day one. it's a really good console. I don't think they've done anything wrong with it as far as I'm concerned. I like everything about it. I like the fact that it hasn't got a web browser on it. I'm not interested in using it as the center of my home entertainment. I don't want to do everything that I ever do at home on the Switch. I like the fact that its interface starts up almost instantly. It's clean, really fast, and easy to use. I'm trying to navigate my PS4. God, I get lost half the time. I don't know what on earth I'm doing. If you played a game as one user and you want to switch to another user, I still haven't worked out what the actual process of doing that is properly. I just turn the thing off and on again at the wall. It's the easiest way. Whereas the Switch, it's just nice.
You start a game, you pick who you want to be, and you're done.
Yeah. And if you want to switch, press the Y button, says who do you want to play instead, and it switches over to them. It's really easy.
It really is just a pick up and play kind of console. And it's good to see something like, it's not trying to be a media hub. It's not trying to be the center of your entertainment life. It's like you play games on here. That's what this thing is for. It's for video games. Do you remember them?
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's how it should be. And people complain about cartridges. They're wrong. Cartridges are the way it should be. It's the way it always was. They're more robust than the other media, so they cost a bit more. So what? You get what you pay for. You buy discs, they wear out.
True.
Buy cartridges, you can blow on them when they wear out.
The kids of today will never understand our pain of having to blow in NES carts.
Nope. Although I'm sure I read somewhere that that actually damaged them more than it made them work. It's just
the moisture from your breath is like rusting and corroding the contacts.
Didn't matter, it seemed to work.
Trust me, it works. You got to blow on them. But it damages it. I don't give a shit. I'm the only one who can make it work right.
Yep.
Oh, man. So with Kid Trip, one of my friends was jokingly asking, what relation does it have to the Bit Trip series?
Right. That's not one that I can necessarily answer wonderfully. Clearly, the IP's owned by different people, and if there's any similarity in namings or whatever, it's purely coincidental. It's probably the official legal answer. I'm not sure. How long's that series been about? Because Kid Trip was actually in development probably about 6 years ago now, if not longer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the guy, Mike Burns, who originally created it, I originally encountered him on the Nintendo Life forums as one of these pixel artists, just doing little mock-ups of things here and there. But he was actually putting together some coding skills in the background, and these mock-ups were a bit more than just pictures. They were live sort of examples of gameplay. And Kid Trip was one that he'd sort of started putting together. And all these different concepts and things that he built up, he never got one finished. And it was a bit of a running joke from around people who knew him that he would never finish a game. when this was looking like it was something that was going to come to fruition, that's when I was originally in contact with him. I'd got 3DS development gear at the time. The company I was working for was putting out 3DS games. And I did him a mock-up of one of the levels, actually, in 3D, and sent him a link so he could view it on his 3DS. That's when I first offered to do the conversion for him. But yes, he's been around a long time. It took him at least 3 years from that point to actually finish it and get it out on iOS. And it was published in 2014, I think. So it's been another 3 years to get it on 3DS and Switch, just simply because it took me that long to convince him that I could do it and that I was serious. I had to set up a company and everything.
Have you been in talks about bringing it to any other platforms?
Well, I can't comment on rumor and speculation. but yeah, totally.
I mean, our listeners know that our show is very, very Xbox friendly. And of course, I have to ask if there's any chance of seeing Kid Trip on the Xbox One.
Well, I mean, in totally unrelated news and unrelated to anything, I just happened to look at the Xbox site to see what it's like to get developer status. And I think it's about as easy as signing up for a Gmail account. It is incredibly easy. And they send you some development hardware totally for free. So it looks like Four Horses might be coming an Xbox developer soon. And we've got to put something out there. So Kid Trip's a distinct possibility.
Nice. Would you bring Digger Dan as well?
I'm not sure. That's been on two generations of systems now, and as much love as I have for the game, the code's sort of horrible. It was my first big solo project. I mean, there's bits in the code that still refer to DS graphics hardware, even in the 3DS version. So it takes some work to sort of beat it into shape to make it run on other platforms. So I might put that one to rest, whereas Kid Trip's definitely been built with multi-platform in mind. It took 1 week to get it from 3DS to Switch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was pleased with that.
That's a pretty quick turnaround for sure.
And one of those days was spent playing Crash Bandicoot because my development hardware hadn't arrived.
I mean, that's a good way to pass the time if you got time to kill, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd sent my wife and child off to visit family down in Yorkshire. So So yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be working on this Switch version. Oh, where's Crash Bandicoot?
Daddy's got a lot of work today. I'm going to need the whole day to myself. I have a lot of work to get done. Family leaves, Crash Bandicoot goes on.
Pretty much.
That's the smart way to do it, man.
Well, the less smart way to do it is then send them a picture of the windscreen when you when you've completed the game 100% in a sort of bragging sort of way. Maybe not so smart.
Because we're talking about Crash Bandicoot, and that's on PlayStation, do you have any plans of possibly seeing Kid Trip on PS4 or on the Vita?
Well, funnily enough, when I was looking at that Xbox development, I also went and looked at Sony, how to sign up for Sony, and it's a little bit more complicated with them, but we're thinking about it, definitely. Definitely. I would, if I was to play it out on PS4, I would like to try and do Vita as well. I know Vita's sort of falling out of favor a bit, but it's a nice little platform.
I love my Vita. I have a lot of issues with Sony and the PS4, but I love my Vita so much.
Yeah, it's a good little system. I knew about the Vita before it was launched. I say in a smug industry insider sort of way.
Nice humble brag.
Yep. And slightly less humble, also the Xperia Play. Do you remember that one?
Oh, God. Barely. Yeah,
I worked for a company that was developing games for that long before it was launched. We got various different iterations of the hardware as well. Same with the Vita. We got a version of the Vita that had a sliding screen, I think, or is that the Xperia Play? Anyway, probably can't tell you that.
Can't tell me more than you just accidentally mentioned.
Yep. It's all right. It's not like I'm going to be playing to Sony for confidential NDA.
Don't worry. They don't listen to the show anyway.
That's all right.
Trying to think. Sliding screen. The only thing I remember with the sliding screen was the PSP Go.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the order that things came out. I'm sure the development kit that we had for the Vita had a sliding screen. But it didn't have physical joysticks. It had some sort of clever touchpad joysticks that weren't great.
That would have been really interesting to see.
Yeah, I to be honest, I think pictures of it got out onto the internet. So, not mine, obviously.
Good cover. So, aside from Kid Trip, is there anything that you personally are working on instead of working on other people's properties? Or are you happy just helping other developers get their games on different systems?
Well, I'm working on a few ideas in my head. I'm not putting anything down into code yet because, like I say, my free time's limited, and I was sort of hoping Kid Trip might better fund my retirement so I can do this full time. but it's sort of easier for me because I don't have art skills, I don't have music skills, and I sort of don't consider my design skills too great, although I did create some cracking levels in Digger Dan. It's easier for me to work with other people at the moment. I mean, I don't know how much I can say, but it wouldn't be massively out of the bounds of possibility for me to bring the sequel to Kid Trip to consoles. It's been talked about, but there's nothing in writing yet, no agreements made. But yeah, it's easier for me to work with other people at the minute.
Which makes sense. I know plenty of people who are easier to just do jobs for other people than, you know, like myself. I'm not creative in the least, but I can talk about other people's shit just fine.
Yeah.
So what else is going on in your life? Is there anything that you want to talk about that I haven't asked? Or are there any questions when you do interviews that you wish people would ask you?
If people ask me for my bank details so they could put money in my account, that would be great. I don't think so. No, I mean, I can talk on all manner of subjects, but they're quite possibly boring to people who are mostly interested in video games. That's a difficult question. What question would you like to be asked? Wow. Okay. No, I can't come up with anything in a reasonable amount of time, so I'm going to pass on that one.
Are there any questions that you hear in interviews that you're just tired of being asked?
Not yet. No. I must be up to about 10 interviews by now, so it's a reasonable number, but no, not really. I like to talk, so.
So what are you looking forward to in 2018?
Wow.
Game-wise or, like, non-game-wise, whatever. Like, what are you excited about for next year?
Well, possibly a bit sad, but we're off back to Disneyland Paris with my son in February. That's about the only thing I can think of at the minute that I'm looking forward to, because I haven't really thought that far ahead. Go to 2019. I'm off on a nice cruise.
Nice. It's good to have plans that far ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah. We were actually on a cruise earlier in the year, and we were just sort of looking forward to try and find one that we could take the mother-in-law and the child on with us, because it was just the two of us on this one. So, but no, what am I looking forward to? There must be something game-related. Well, let's say Metroid 4. I'm looking forward to that in 2018, preferably January the 1st, 2018. That would be brilliant.
Wow, that'd be amazing. I don't think it'll happen, but that would be amazing.
Maybe a bit ambitious.
Has anyone ever released a game on New Year's Day?
It'd probably be the daft sort of thing we'd do. I mean, we launched on Thanksgiving. I'm not sure if that was a good thing or a bad thing. But,
I mean, with a low price like that, you could just say it's a Black Friday kind of deal.
Well, I did that. I don't know if you saw. I did a tweet saying this Black Friday, pick up Kid Trip for just $3.99. And then I put a little star next to this Black Friday with a little disclaimer at the bottom saying, or any other day of the year. That's the regular price. But I know there are definitely people out there who only buy things in the sales. And it's like, well, you don't only get bargains in the sales. I mean, it's like, Digger Dan's got 125 levels. There's hours and hours of gameplay in there, and it's $2.
Gee, it's like, how cheap do you want a game to be? It's $4, or in Digger Dan, it's $2. How cheap are you?
Exactly. Exactly. I try, there's a lot of debate going about the cost of games and value for money. And as a developer trying to sell something really cheap, it's frustrating to see people drop over $100 on a AAA brand new game, and then all sorts of expansion packs and whatever. And it's like, are you gonna get that much value out of it in the long run? I mean, some games, yeah. I mean, I've played Team Fortress for more hours than I've spent with my son, I think. And similar with Elite, there are definitely games where you do get that value. But then people look at shorter games, and they just instantly seem to dismiss them because they're a bit shorter. It's like, but compared to the price, you know. If you go to the cinema, I don't know how much cinema costs generally over in the States, but over here we're sort of paying about £8-9, which I think translates to about $12 for a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, it's like, around that then, over here,
and like $4 for a game that'll keep you going at least 1 to 2 hours. People seem to think that's bad value, and it's like, it's not really.
Yeah, I mean, like, how, I don't know. People feel so entitled with games these days, where they'll have no problem dropping $60 for a game, another $20 for the deluxe edition, another $50 in microtransactions and DLC and loot crates and all this other crap. And I'm like, this game's $4. Just get this instead. It's much cheaper. Well, I don't know. You might get more headaches with Kid Trip with how hard it is.
Yes.
I mean, that's even why our show, we started off with reviews, and our scale was buy it, try it, or deny it. And with cheaper games, it came down to the point where we would say, well, the game is fun. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's cheap enough that why not just get it? And that's why we created our fuck it, why not rating, where it's cheap, just get it. It's cheap, sounds it's fun, enough. Just fuck it, buy it.
Yeah, sounds fair enough.
And it catches on. Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention or talk about with Kid Trip?
Just what we've already said. Go buy it. Why not?
It's exactly. So where can people stay in touch with you and with what you're doing?
Well, we have the website fourhorses.co.uk, which I periodically update, but generally you want to be on Twitter at fourhorsesgames, where I have been known to randomly drop a few freebie download codes, but it's $4, just go buy it. But that's where I'll post things day to day. I'm not the sort of developer who's constantly spamming my personal thoughts every 5 minutes. If I tweet, it's generally because I've got something to say or I'm quite proud about something. But at Four Horses Games.
Awesome. And I guess we'll hear more about what Four Horses is doing in 2018.
Hopefully, yeah. It's going to be, like I say, it's going to be an update to Kid Trip, first of all. Put a new icon on there, because, again, people seem to have a disliking for certain styles of icons on Switch.
Oh, God. You got to have a magically wonderful icon on the Switch.
Well, I really like the icon. It's the same as on the other platforms, but it does get quite big with it being on the Switch. But people think it's just not detailed enough. So I've got another one lined up ready. We'll get that swapped out.
Did you have a fan vote on it? Did they approve it?
Not yet. We're going to do that. I've got one that I'm submitting. And Mike, the original developer, has also got his own that he's going to put into the vote. And we might put a comedy one in there just for fun.
Nice.
It'll end up Icon McIcon Face.
Nice. Well, I am definitely looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to more updates on it. And I am secretly looking forward to hopefully seeing it on Xbox next year as well. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I agree. That would be really cool.
Well, Mick, it has been fantastic having you on the show. The game's Kid Trip out now on 3DS and on the Switch. It is only $4, so just buy the damn thing. Mick, do you have any final words to end the show?
Just thanks for listening, everyone. Hope I've entertained you.